Got something on your mind? Tell Lisa all about it. 203-333-9422. It's the Lisa Wexler Show on WICC 600.
And welcome back to the show. Our next guest, State Representative and Speaker-designate Matt Ritter, was described very recently, just a few weeks ago, by the Connecticut Mirror as a political prodigy. He was elected to the Hartford City Council at age 25, the House at 28. I think the first election was by a mere 2 votes, but after that, he skated in by very healthy majorities. He was the majority leader at the age of 34 years old. He comes from political aristocracy here in Connecticut. His father, Tom Ritter, was the House Speaker from 1993 to 1999, and his mother, Christine Keller, has been a very well-respected judge for her entire career. She was recently elevated to the Supreme Court in July of 2020 by Governor Lamont after serving both as a trial judge and as an appellate judge. So I think it's fair to say that our next guest, Matt Ritter, who represents Hartford, no less, knows a little bit about Connecticut. Hello, Representative Ritter. Hello, Speaker. Hello. Welcome to the Lisa Wexler Show today. A pleasure to have you on.
Thanks, Lisa. Thanks for having me.
So, what shall I call you? Shall I call you Representative Ritter? Shall I call you Speaker Designate? What shall I call you now?
You know, I think Matt works just fine.
Does Matt work okay for you? You sure?
Matt works just fine. I've responded to it for the last 38 years. It doesn't harm to do it now. So
Matt, does that mean you're only 38 years old?
Yeah.
Wow. You really are a political prodigy. Congratulations.
That's a bit of an exaggeration, but... It's going to be a challenging year, no doubt, and I'm looking forward to getting to work.
Absolutely. So let me begin with some breaking news that I saw this morning having to do with gambling and sports gambling coming out of the Mashantucket tribe. A big announcement today that they had reached a deal with DraftKings, which is a professional sports betting operation in many states. And my understanding is, unless I'm crazy, we don't have legalized sports betting yet in Connecticut, do we?
We do not. We have a lot of informal sports gambling, I can tell you that.
Sure.
But we do not have legalized sports gaming. What makes it complicated is we are one of the few states that just can't pass a law and enact sports gambling. If that was the case, it would have happened probably last year. We have to come to an agreement with the tribes. The tribes believe they have exclusivity to sports gaming. There are others that do not. There's concern of litigation. And more importantly, you wouldn't want to jeopardize the compact, which delivers 25% of the slot revenue at the two casinos, which is, you know, $150 to $200 million a year. So it's complicated. I know people hate to hear that. And I'm hopeful this year we'll find a global settlement to this issue. So I hope this is the year we get it done. But it will require some lawyers to figure some stuff out.
Well, you're a lawyer. I forgot to mention that. You're a partner at Chipman and Goodwin, so you know a little bit about law.
Yep.
Let me ask you this, Matt.
I do, yeah, but not this particular area.
Yeah, no, this is its own kind of thing. But the basic,
kind of
I
thing,
guess,
yeah,
the basic question is whether or not the legislature, I think, going forward, will recognize the exclusivity of the tribes in being able to keep sports gaming revenue and then dole out the part back to the state of Connecticut that they're supposed to dole out. Do you think that that's the way the legislature will ultimately come down on this?
I think the legislature is frustrated that we haven't legalized it at some point. Again, it's not the biggest issue in the state of Connecticut, but it's just one of those things where the average person goes, why don't you guys get your act together and figure this thing out? Other states have done it, and it is revenue that could support, you know, local schools and infrastructure upgrades. Let's say we recognize exclusivity for the tribes. The problem would still be that the concern from the governor's office is that somebody else could file a lawsuit and claim that the tribes do not have exclusivity for statewide activity. They certainly could have it on their tribal lands, but the problem is sports gaming is done on your phone, and that is done outside of tribal land. So the concern is an MGM or a sports tech or somebody could file a lawsuit and say, that violates the Commerce Clause. Now you're tied up in litigation for years. That's the concern.
So in order to alleviate the concern, you're looking for some kind of a global settlement of everybody's. But I don't know if you'll get there. The tribes may stand fast.
I'm not sure you'll get there either. And so at some point, I think you're going to have to take the risk of litigation. And you would hope that a judge would rule quickly and understand there's, you know, the state would want this resolved. Yeah.
Yeah, I get that. So Matt Ritter, as the speaker designate, what is... Mm-hmm. the most important thing on your agenda to pass in the way of legislation this session?
Well, first and foremost, we have to do our budget, right? The legislature's main function, particularly in the odd years of our two-year term, is to adopt the biennium budget. Again, unlike a municipality that does a one-year budget, we do two-year budgets. So whatever we adopt this spring will be the budget from July 1 of 2021 to June 30th of 2023. And that is going to be a tall order. Obviously, we're trying to respond to COVID, which all of our legislation, whether it's the budget or other bills, probably a lot of it has to deal with COVID and the response to it. We're going to have to figure out where we are. Our revenue estimates are widely difficult to put together for our nonpartisan staff, right? We thought we were going to have a $1.5 billion deficit to end FY20, and we ended up with a $38 million surplus. Same is going to be true. COVID does not give you a true indication. I think it's hard to know where revenue is. But realistically, we're going to be patient. We're waiting to see what revenue estimates are by the spring when a vaccine is hopefully making its way through not only our nursing homes, but folks over 65, individuals with pre-existing conditions. I think that'll make a big, big difference for hospital capacity and businesses. And then number two, to see what the federal government does. It looks like they're close in Washington, Lisa. The deal they're supposed to vote on this week would provide Connecticut somewhere around $1.5 billion for the state to spend as we see fit, which, again, could help with budget deficits as well.
Are you not beyond thrilled about Rosa DeLauro's appointment, Matt? Is that unbelievable news? I've said on this radio show, I think it's the best news for Connecticut in 20 years. It's unbelievable.
It's big, 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 big. You can't big. Undersell it. Yeah, it's a big deal. And she will do a great job. And she loves Connecticut. And, you know, I talked to her about a week and a half ago, but before the final vote, she felt confident. She felt good. But what she really said, which I found so encouraging, is, this job is only great if I'm working with my local partners at the state level. And it's important that we as a state kind of let her know and our congressional delegation know the things we're going to need because of COVID. And we're the eyes and ears on the ground. And I think she's looking forward to those conversations. But it's a major deal for the state of Connecticut.
It's a major deal. It's just a major capstone for her particular personal career, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm over the moon about it, because anybody who understands the way government works knows that Rosa DeLauro is going to make sure that Connecticut gets its piece of the pie. And historically, we've given a lot more to Washington, D.C. than we've ever gotten back.
Lisa, that's such a wonderful point, because I think someone might be listening to the show and going, well, why are we, the state, federal handout, and why are you waiting for the federal government to give you money? Well, first of all, this is a national emergency. This is a national crisis. Connecticut is not alone in having revenue problems like many other states, red and blue alike, because of COVID. And number two, we send a lot of revenue back. And the SALT cap that got passed by the Republicans in 2017 also had a negative impact on Connecticut. And so having someone like Rosa in the room, it's just going to make a big difference. And what I would say is, if you don't get federal assistance, I don't care where you live, Connecticut, Florida, Texas, if the federal government does not come with a new stimulus package, which it appears they will, and another one next year, all it means is you're laying off school teachers, you're laying off police officers, you're laying off firefighters, you're raising taxes locally, you're cutting municipal aid. It has a negative impact on everybody's life. And what I would say is, at the end of the day, Connecticut is so prepared for this rainy day. We have $3.1 billion in our rainy day fund, the largest both as a percentage and as a dollar amount in the history of the state of Connecticut, ever, not even close. When I started in the legislature, the rainy day fund was $0. Let that sink in. Zero. Not a million. It was $0. Now it's $3.1 billion. So we've prepared ourselves. But the problem is, to go and drain the entirety of that rainy day fund would not set us up for the next inevitable, issue that arises when there's another recession, maybe 10 years down the road or 15 years down the road. So I want to keep that rainy day fund healthy. We need to use it, some of it probably, to get through the next 3 years, but hopefully not all of it. And the federal government funds would help supplement that and help us stimulate our economy locally to get people back to work, to help our small businesses, to help our restaurants, because I truly believe that as we head to summer and fall, the worst of this pandemic will be behind us.
Yeah, that's what we're all hoping. We're chatting with Speaker-designate Matt Ritter, who represents Hartford. So Matt, in terms of that, one of the things, I'm speaking now from the Fairfield County point of view, couple of things raised. Number one, do you think, well, it would be very nice if we could advocate to get that salt tax bit of the bill repealed, which maybe we'll have a shot with Joe Biden. Maybe we will. That would be really good because it seemed to indiscriminately punish certain people in the Northeast, and it just didn't seem fair.
Yep.
So hopefully we can get that repealed. I know that that isn't under your bailiwick per se, but I was wondering in terms of prioritizing the federal funds that we get, and I know that you're going to be a part of that conversation. What about Metro North and I-95 and the transportation corridors that even before this pandemic really needed the only kind of help that a federal government could give us in order to upgrade our transportation? And that's a big thing here. And people are worried that Metro North will even, quote unquote, go under because no one's using it right now. Obviously, it's temporary, but, you know, it's bad.
Yeah, Metro North receives a pretty sizable sum of money, is my understanding, under the bill that they're negotiating in Congress right now. So I think they will see some relief, which will be a bridge, hopefully, to a better day. But, yeah, transportation issues won't go away. I will say the debate has probably changed somewhat because of COVID. I was talking to someone yesterday. As you know, we looked at a lot of iterations of truck tolls and different things, and none of those were able to pass the legislature last year. And we will not have a toll bill this year. I mean, I just don't have the support in my caucus for it. It's something that I personally believe in, but understand it's controversial. And at the end of the day, our STF, our Special Transportation Fund, still needs to be stabilized with gas tax revenues plummeting because people are driving less. But I also am not sure that we are going to have the same need for highway infrastructure that we've had in the past. And I'll give you an example. Do we all really think that everybody's going to work 5 days a week in New York City going forward? Do we really think that?
I don't think so.
If you live in, I don't think so either. So I think I do think that there is going to be a bit of a change in the need. Doesn't mean you don't have to redo the highways or expand them, but I don't think life will ever go back the same. I mean, I think about where I can work. I work in Hartford and I live in Hartford. I don't think I'll ever go back to the office 5 days a week. I can do a lot from home, and I think that will continue. So it may rethink our transportation strategy, but it's still an important thing. And the governor has made it a priority of his. But right now, if you asked me our biggest challenge financially in the next 5 years, it may very well be the STF fund unless we get, again, an influx of state revenues or federal revenues to help with that.
And what are we going to do about our hospitals? We're one of the few states in the country that still or that even manages to try and tax hospital revenue. That's very controversial. You know, the pressures on the healthcare system, to the average human being, it seems like hospitals should be doing better than ever because, quote unquote, people are getting more sick. But it really doesn't work that way because a lot of the expenditures of hospitals are not money that they're going to get back. And the way that they make money, the way that they actually make money are from, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's things like cancer. It's longer term chronic illnesses. People don't want to go into the ugly, seamy side of how hospitals actually make money. But it isn't acute health pandemics. And they're crying. Their balance sheets are suffering terribly. I think that that's going to be something that comes in front of you, Matt, big time.
Yeah, I mean, and also elective surgeries are a major source of revenue for hospitals, hip replacements, things like that. And those obviously were put on ice during the first part of the pandemic. But I'm not sure how, I mean, I would remind folks of the amazing comprehensive deal that we entered into with our hospitals back in 2018 now. And I give Joy Arisimowitz, the outgoing speaker, a lot of credit. He was a big part of that. We've reached a 10-year settlement with our hospitals. It might be eight. But it extends to 2026 6 years now, back in 2018. So we actually have a huge global settlement with all the hospitals, both on, again, the tax. Yes, there was a tax, but that leverages federal funds. The dispute was how the revenue that came back from the federal government was dispersed. That was very controversial in the Malloy administration years. That has also been resolved. So our hospitals, I think they would tell you that their partnership with the state has never been better. Again, from the small ones to the large systems, we've actually completely worked that out. So their issue now is not really the state government or this taxation match program from the feds. It really more is, to your point, Lisa, which is their balance sheets because they had to cancel elective surgeries, because they had to purchase PPE. The good news is the federal government, again, I keep going back to them, not because I look to the federal government to answer all of our problems, but this is a national crisis. Connecticut hospitals are no different than the hospitals in Iowa. They're all going through the same thing. They have received a lot of aid so far from the state under the CARES Act, and we would probably give them additional funding from any federal dollars that we receive.
Well, we're chatting with Representative Matt Ritter, who is our speaker designate, and before I let you go, it's so nice to get to know you a little bit. I'm sorry I'm not doing this in person. I normally like to do these kinds of things in person, but there is no normal right now. Maybe one day.
There is no normal right now, but we're getting there. We're getting there.
We're getting there.
Slowly, but sure, it's going to be tough a couple months. Yeah.
I have to put in a plug for my favorite part of Connecticut government, which is our probate court system, because I'm a probate judge. And
I know. Yes.
Yeah. And I just want to say that just giving ourselves a pat on the back. You know, we didn't close one day. I can tell you in our little court, Westport Weston, we didn't close. And as far as I know, no probate court closed during this entire pandemic. We were out there working hard. Our clerks were cohorting as necessary and then came back together when things looked better. But the work that we do is so essential to average human beings. And you know that over 50% of our caseload is now non-probate. It's family law.
Yep.
So
yep.
I just want to put in a plug to ask for, you know, the consistent one-third contribution in the great bargain of 2011 that was done with the legislature. I know you're aware of all the details, but I just want to put in a plug for probate court because I feel
no,
that I
appreciate it. Our probate courts are instrumental. Bob Killian, who's no longer the Hartford probate judge, who's a very good
best.
Friend, was our probate judge
the
for
best.
Decades. He's a very, very good
the
friend
best.
And neighbor and yes, he wouldn't allow me to cut the probate funds. I can promise you that, Lisa.
Well, that's good. And would you send him my best? By the way, another shout out to Kent Nevins, who's an old buddy of mine. I understand he's a partner.
Yeah, yeah. Kent's a great guy.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
But it's it's well taken. And probate courts are instrumental, as you said, and do a lot of great work for people. And for many folks, their most common interaction with the judicial system is probate court, right?
Right. And we try and make it very non-intimidating. We don't even wear robes. I mean, we purposely try and make ourselves extremely accessible to the average person. So that's why I ask. Yeah. Well, Matt Ritter, it's so nice to get to know you. I hope you'll come back on the show. Congratulations. I guess, have you announced all of your committee assignments, the chairmanships, the chairmanships, the co-chairmanships? Has everything been announced? Because I've been wanting to see, did Jonathan Steinberg get reappointed to public health as the chair?
Yes, he is. He was reappointed. We've done all the chairs. Chairman Steinberg will continue at public health. He does a wonderful job for that committee. And we are announcing the full committees today. So the actual membership of the committees will be out this afternoon. So we'll be done by December 7th, which might be a record. But I felt it was important to get it done early because of COVID. But yes, Jonathan will continue. Yep.
That's great. Well, thank you so much, Matt Ritter. A pleasure to get to know you, and thank you for coming on the show today.
Thanks so much for having me, and I look forward to coming back on soon.
You bet. The Lisa Wexler Show, coming up more. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.